Just in time for summer, the folks at Epic Brewing have released a new canned cocktail, the Utah Margarita. A delicious blend of real lime and agave, the Utah Margarita is ready to drink by the river or in the park. And here's the kicker, no need to buy it at a liquor store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, or visit Epic Brewing on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. Today on CityCast Salt Lake, growth, land use, and the good old-fashioned way of life question are all at stake in Utah's wild horse debate, which means it's the Bureau of Land Management versus horse girls. And that is a showdown nobody wants to take a side in, including Salt Lake Tribune reporter Brian Maffley. Today's Tuesday, November 29th, 2022. I'm Allie Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Brian Maffley, you've been reporting on Utah's wild horses for a long time. And the reason we called you up is because I'm obsessed with the return of Mongo. Can I recount this story to you as like I perceive it?
Well, let's hear it. I'd love to get your take on it, Allie.
Okay, because you know I'm a horse girl.
I didn't know that, but I do now.
Okay, so here's how I understand it. As I read it in all of our local news and then later in the Washington Post, this guy named Shane is local guy, has this horse named Mongo. This is his favorite horse. They're best buddies. They're camping in the West Desert, and in the night, he wakes up in his tent and hears a stampede of wild horses going by and panics for good reason, because horses are pack animals. They're herd animals. And so when your horse, no matter how broke or tame or beloved they are, when they get around a herd of wild horses that are running screaming through the West Desert, they can't resist the urge to break free and join them. And it's a calling. And so Mongo's like, Shane, it's been real. I love you, man, but I'm out of here. Takes off, joins this herd of wild horses, which there is a name for that herd, right? Out in Chula?
The Anakie herd, yeah.
The Anakie herd. And so he takes off with these horses. And then 8 years later, the Bureau of Land Management is rounding up some wild horses in Chula, and they are pretty sure they see Mongo and call Shane and are like, is this your horse? And now, just what, a month ago, Shane and Mongo were reunited after 8 years. And it's a beautiful tale.
Yeah. I think a lot of these times, Mongo, you know, could have easily wound up in the adoption pen or out in a corral out in the Midwest somewhere for the rest of his life. So This is kind of an unusual happy ending here.
It's also interesting to me as a way of thinking about the wild horse quote unquote problem, because it's a modern tale of a horse breaking free to join a wild horse herd. But that's kind of like the origin of wild horses, right? Like a lot of Utah's wild horses are formerly, they like come from horses that kind of broke free from early settlers or ranchers and took off on their own.
Well, they're the descendants of those horses from 100 or more years ago back to the Spanish explorers' times. They were the ones who first released horses on the Western Range back in the 1700s. Populations of those horses persist to this day in Utah, you know, Nevada, Wyoming. They've done pretty well. So in 1971, Congress passed a law protecting those animals because they were getting shot indiscriminately by ranchers who were unhappy with having the horses compete with their cattle for forage. So that year in 1971, they came under the protection of the Wild and Free Roaming Horses and Burros Act. And since then, the wild horses have been under the management of the Bureau of Land Management, which is a land agency, not a wildlife agency or a livestock agency. And so they've had this really impossible task thrust upon them. And it's, you know, it's been a controversy now for the last 50 years and with no end in sight. And that's why they do these roundups periodically in Utah, Nevada, you know, Oregon, Wyoming as well, because these horses have no natural predators left because, oh, guess what? We wiped out the cougars and the wolves. So they proliferate and you can't hunt them because they're not, you know, they're protected and they're not,
right,
they're not livestock. So you can't round them up and send them to the slaughterhouse. You know, they it's said that they double in population every, you know, 6 years or something like that. And so there's just this kind of steady need to take them off the range.
Am I understanding it correctly that from the jump, this is really about population control? Like, that is the problem that needs to be solved.
The BLM has identified, you know, what it said contends are appropriate management levels for each of these 9 herd management areas in Utah. And some folks who advocate for the horses think those numbers are ridiculously small and arbitrary. And the herds are chronically 2 to 3 times over those levels. So, you know, the opponents of the horse policies kind of can point to these high numbers of horses as the populations are out of control. You get the two sides like ascribing to two versions of reality. One says there are too many horses on the range, and the other's saying, no, the number of horses is fine. It's the number of cows that we need to deal with. There's, you know, 8, 9, 10 times more cattle on public land in these herd management areas than horses.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird for the BLM to say, oh, we have too many horses on the range. They could just as easily say we have too many cattle on the range. However, yeah, you know, the ranchers who run these cattle there, they have practically a vested right to run their cattle there. So who are we managing the public land for? You know, that's what it comes down to.
And it's such a key Utah question because, I mean, you know, the thing that we talk about specifically in Salt Lake all the time is water.
Yeah.
Right? And the water issue bumps up against private ranching consistently. And so I think that's also where the wild horse issue sort of intersects with our water crisis is like, well, wait a minute. We're exploring all these options to protect the integrity of private ranching. But should we be diverting our attention over to private ranching and exploring exactly what's going on there and how much it's worth protecting? And I know that that's like, look, I'm not going to get elected governor anytime soon for saying that.
And now you're definitely not.
now it's over. It's over. It's over. Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita. A delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave, and they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a 6-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo. We talk a lot on this show about our city's crown jewels. What are the institutions that open doors in our community and regulate its pulse? I choose Salt Lake Community College. And it is a home for incredibly focused Salt Lakers. Nearly 80% of their students work while going to school, many full-time jobs. If I could do college all over again, I would not be 33 and sitting on these damn student loans. And slick students aren't. 80% graduate with little to no student loan debt or save thousands knocking out credits before transferring to a 4-year institution. Every day, Salt Lake Community College is transforming lives and communities through education. If you want to learn something new, refine a trade, or pursue a higher degree for the first time, explore your options at slcc.edu. Study alongside hard workers, save precious money, and be one in a class of 19, not 100. In the story of Mongo, we brought up one of the BLM roundups. Can you talk me through like exactly what the BLM perceives as a solution to the wild horse population problem and what these roundups sort of entail?
Yeah, well, what the solution is, there is no solution. You asked about the roundups. Well, they use helicopters to guide these groups of horses. They live in groups and direct them toward these corrals they set up in the desert. And the corrals kind of funnel them into these pens, you know, as they get into these pinch points. Sometimes the horses get startled and freak out, and some, you know, one of them might break a leg or a bone that they have to be put down. And that happens not at every roundup, but it happens enough to be alarming. Hmm. I mean, is rounding up the horses a solution when they're just going to repopulate and within 6 years you're back to, you know, this excessive number of horses? But that's how they're treating it. And depending on, you know, who the Interior Secretary is, the fertility control program gets priority. So, you know, during the Obama years, there was a heavy emphasis on fertility control. And that just went out the window when Ryan Zinke became Interior Secretary under Donald Trump. And now we have a Democratic administration. They're kind of coming back to fertility control. However, you know, it's like, is that really a solution? And so, you know, a few years ago when Trump was president, certain political leaders in Utah were really pushing the idea of shipping these horses off to slaughter in other countries that allow it. The United States, that's not allowed. Mm-hmm. That is a proposal that certainly would solve the problem, quote unquote. Right. But it's just not acceptable to most Americans. That the idea of slaughtering horses for meat is just insane, you know, and that leaves, you know, these kind of perpetual roundups as the route forward. The hope is that they can be adopted by people who know what they're doing, like people like you, Allie. I bet you'd be a great horse adopter. But again, under the Trump administration, the adoption program got mired in all sorts of scandal with people taking advantage of the $1,000 a head incentives. You know, they take the incentive money, adopt the horse, and then next thing you know, they're like on a train to Juarez, you know, to be turned into hamburger, allegedly. Okay, I don't know if that's all been proven
allegedly
yet. but it's been the subject of an investigation, and the New York Times had an expose on it. You'd think there would be a lot of people who would enjoy owning one of these horses, but they're difficult. Do you really want to put in the effort to train a horse that has been roaming wild for its whole life and domesticated? It must be a very challenging thing to do.
And not to mention, like, horse keeping is just like an increasingly impossible thing to do. I mean, you look right here at Salt Lake County. They just closed down the racetrack at the equestrian center. Even Salt Lake County was like, we don't want to manage the equestrian center. Get it off of our plate. And they basically gave it to USU. And so at every level, it feels like horses are something that we find to be exquisite and we admire them, but it's like a bit of a hot potato because we increasingly don't have space for them and don't know what to do about that.
Yeah, I mean, what you're pointing out here is one of the issues we're having is there's fewer people in the United States who have the time and space and resources to take care of horses. And it seems like as our land gets more expensive along the Wasatch Front, there's fewer opportunities for people to raise horses here.
Yeah. What I think is so interesting about this problem is that, we keep using the word problem, this situation is that the horse people aren't saying necessarily, let every single horse live, don't touch the horses. Like, it seems like a lot of these organizations, they're saying, we need to do something.
Yeah.
But we don't think that what the BLM is doing is working.
That's right.
What are some of the things that those folks are proposing?
You know, these groups are not all on the same page. I mean, there's lots of them. And some are kind of coming at this from the animal rights perspective, where they oppose the use of contraceptives. They feel, you know, that the best thing to do is just leave them alone, let them proliferate. Mm. The more mainline groups are strongly urging the BLM to adopt a wholesale program of contraceptive use. And definitely they're also opposed to gelding the males. They feel that gelding disrupts the social networks of the wild horses. Administering contraceptives to the mares is a lot less invasive and acceptable. So they would like BLM to really get serious with contraceptives as the path forward.
I think that wild horses are fascinating. And I have a lot of friends that work in, like, you know, policy or think tanks or whatever in the West. And I have reached out to them previously to say, do you want to talk about wild horses, you know, on the show? And even politicians, like time after time, the answer I get is, please God, don't make me talk about wild horses. Like, it feels like this is an issue that everyone wants to avoid coming out with a position on. Why is that?
Because I think whatever position you take will be the wrong one for certain people you need to stay close to. And so I have religiously tried to avoid taking any kind of position here as a reporter. And so I am absolutely neutral in this. Yeah. I don't even have an opinion, Allie.
Yeah. So I'm a member of the Backcountry Horsemen Mountain Ridge chapter in Utah. And I think something I've learned being on that board is that a lot of Utahns perceive our relationship with horses as sort of a symbol of our relationship with freedom. And an attack on the horse is an attack on our freedom. Yeah. And the wild horse is like the symbol of rugged Western individualism. And like we have this like really emotional connection with horses, especially in the West.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's a reason that it also makes this so hard to talk about, because like the West is changing and how we live in the West is changing. And maybe we need to come to terms with that faster than we want to accept.
But I think you're right about the symbolism that the horse carries. And of course, humans have a very special relationship with horses going back thousands of years. I think that makes it more difficult to just, you know, what do we do if we have too many deer? Oh, well, right. We just like give more hunting permits.
Sit on the porch and shoot them.
Yeah. And what do we do with coyotes? It's like shoot them whenever. In fact, you get paid to shoot them in Utah.
Yeah.
But again, coyotes, I think, are also a symbol of everything evil and corrupt. Mm. And so it becomes easy to use lethal interventions with that species, which is supposedly overpopulating the landscape as well. But with horses, that's out of the question. And so if you are caught shooting a wild horse, that's something you can go to prison for.
Salt Lake Tribune reporter Brian Mathley, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you, Allie. It's always great to be on your show. Look forward to the next time.
If you want to see the Onaki herd up close but don't want to drive to the West Desert, how do you feel about driving to Sandy? Greg Huggins has been photographing these wild horses up close for 12 years. And right now, his beautiful horse pics are on display at Sandy City Hall through the end of December. You can pop by between 8 and 5 p.m. on weekdays, and you'll find the portraits lining the hall on the third floor. You might even pay a visit to Sandy's mare, who is a horse girl, Monica Zoltansky. That's all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. Hey, have you watched that Lindsay Lohan movie, Falling for Christmas, yet? You know it was filmed in Salt Lake, right? I would like to know what you think of it. You know, the Salt Lake of it all. Were there places that you saw and recognized? Did you like it? Are you into Christmas movies being filmed here? 801-203-0137. Leave us a voicemail with your thoughts. We just might play it on the show. We will be back tomorrow morning with more from around this city. Take care. Bye.